Well, that hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay has not stopped, even though it's not been as much in the headlines. The latest figures from the Defense Department say that 100 of the 166 men being held are participating in the strike. 23 are being force-fed a nutritional supplement through nasal tubes. A new commander was appointed at the base in June. The protests began over his policy of searching Korans. We've spoken about this before, but today we want to get the unique perspective of a lawyer just returned from Guantanamo Bay. David Reams is a human rights attorney who represents 16 clients at Guantanamo, just returned, as we said, from a trip there. And David, are any of your clients on the hunger strike, and have you seen them?
I think that more than a dozen of my clients are on hunger strikes. I've seen most of them. Last week, I saw six of them. I saw others back in early March when I visited before.
Well, of course, and they were further into the hunger strike when you saw them last week. What did you see?
I saw men who had lost 40 to 60 pounds. The ones who are not being force-fed are very weak, find it difficult to focus and speak, although they do come to clarity after a while.
Are they laying down? How does it look when one is in a hunger strike and being force-fed through a tube?
Well, the ones who are being force-fed are rather energetic and focused because they're being force-fed. The others are sitting up, as usual, at our interview table with one leg chained to the floor. Sometimes they're slumped before we come in, but gradually they get some focus back as we talk.
When do officials make the determination as to who gets force-fed?
I think the determination of being force-fed nasogastrically comes when the military considers the men close to death. It plays a kind of reckless game of chicken. It doesn't intervene just because a man is on a hunger strike. The man has to be losing consciousness and really nearly be at death's door. That's one of the ways the military uses to deter hunger striking, of course.
Are you worried that any of your clients might die before they're force-fed?
I certainly hope not. I don't think the military will allow men to die, although international law requires the military to respect a man's desire to hunger strike even to death. The policy at Gitmo is to keep men alive by any means possible.
As a lawyer, where do you stand on this idea of force-feeding them?
I think that it violates international law, and men should be respected in their choice to hunger strike even to death, as Bobby Sands of the IRA did decades ago. The British didn't intervene. He died. He became a martyr. And some say that the military is keeping the Guantanamo detainees alive because they don't want to make heroes of zeros, as the expression goes.
Well, actually, we talked about this when Margaret Thatcher died. The prime minister at the helm when Bobby Sands and others were on the hunger strikes, the IRA members imprisoned, and she was excoriated for not intervening. So you are in the middle of what is a national debate about what to do with these prisoners in general, whether or not they're on hunger strike or just at Guantanamo Bay. What do they tell you that they want?
Years ago, when there were hunger strikes over Koran issues, the commander of the time sat down and worked things out. There was discussion. There was flexibility. This commander, however, is not going to talk to the detainees at all until they break their hunger strike. As a result, we're now into the fourth month of the hunger strike. The command has to bring down 40 reinforcements of medics because of the spread of the hunger strike. I'd say that the most important thing right now is for the command to talk to the detainees unconditionally and try to figure out a way to solve the problem.
This is Colonel John Bogdan, who took over command of the detention center last June. You feel he's, running it more like a warden with no wiggle room as opposed to someone who might be able to talk his way out of these kinds of situations?
Well, he is the warden. His style, though, is one of inflexibility, one of I'm not going to blink first. Pragmatism doesn't matter. I think that at bottom, his style of running the camps is the problem. Everything was peaceful and quiet before he assumed command in June. My clients and I often didn't have a lot to talk about. There were no substantial complaints about their treatment. They knew what was going on in the outside world, so I didn't have much to tell them. But when a commander came in who decided to rule with an iron fist, all hell broke loose.
Let's argue his supporters, who would say people who go on hunger strikes are literally taking themselves hostage. And you can't negotiate with hostage takers because then every prisoner in every prison would stop eating.
Well, I suppose that that's the argument. But the fact is that detainees have gone on hunger strikes before, and the hunger strikes have been resolved because the command has been pragmatic. This isn't a macho situation, as Colonel Bogdan seems to think it is. This is not a situation of saving face. This is a situation of pragmatically solving an immediate problem. And because Bogdan didn't sit down with the detainees and work something out, because he wouldn't blink first, we're now into the fourth month of a hunger strike, and the demand has expanded beyond stopping the searches of the Koran to being released from Guantanamo.
And we know the issues there. The president wanted these detainees tried. He was blocked. He wanted them moved to a new facility in Illinois. He was blocked. He wanted other countries to take them. Some refused. But at least one detainee was released to his home country and went into terrorism again. So there's concern as to whether or not other countries can handle them if they're released. So there's that whole rat's nest. But meanwhile, what's the feeling there? You've been several other times. What's the feeling there now as opposed to these other times?
Well, the feeling there now is they're going to continue to protest until the situation resolves itself. They're determined not to allow the Koran to be searched, and they want to put pressure on the government to start transferring them. I don't think that the rat's nest, as you call it, is a rat's nest. I think that there's now a consensus that the 86 detainees who have been cleared for release should be transferred. Obama never had the intention of trying most of them, only a handful. The rest are languishing there without charge. And as I say, 86 have been approved for transfer. Why are they still there?
That's human rights attorney David Reams, who represents 16 detainees at Guantanamo Bay. We'll take a break. When we come back, the question I know he expects: what if one of his clients is released and commits a terrorist act? And just take a second here to let you know what else we're keeping an eye on today. Hearings are being held in Washington into last year's deadly attack on the diplomatic mission in Benghazi. House Republicans insisting the Obama administration is covering up information about the deadly assault. Also news today that the White House is providing $100 million in new Syrian aid, but the money is for humanitarian purposes, not linked to any decision to arm Syrian rebels. And debate over immigration reform continues. Later in this program, we're going to look at whether the bill can survive the hundreds of amendments from the left and the right. But we'll take a break, come back with human rights attorney David Reams in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with David Reams, a civil rights attorney who represents 16 men being held in Guantanamo Bay. He's just back from a visit there. Now, there are, of course, men like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed who are charged with, masterminding the 9/11 attacks. Others are charged with serious crimes. But more than half the detainees have been cleared for release. And David, before the break, you said that on your previous visits, the camp was quite calm. But since a new commander took over last summer, with what you described, an iron fist, conditions have deteriorated. Now we have this hunger strike we're witnessing. Tell us about the changes that you've seen since previous visits.
Well, as part of the effort to break the hunger strike, the command has moved practically all of the men into isolation cells. Before, they had been living communally. In fact, that was one of the main recommendations of Admiral Walsh, who Obama sent down in early 2009, to determine whether or not the camps were complying with the Geneva Conventions. When they began to allow the detainees to live communally, a lot of the tension went out of the camp. Now the men are in isolation cells. They're deprived of the basic necessities: toothbrushes, toothpaste, towels. Their family items, mail, pictures, have been removed. The camp has really reduced them to the Spartan existence of a Spartan, in order to exert psychological pressure on them. So I'd say the conditions of confinement have deteriorated substantially.
What are you picking up, if anything, from the Americans working there?
Well, I can't speak for the people who work there. Bear in mind that most of the guards were in elementary school or high school when 9/11 occurred. I think they don't know why they're there, just as the detainees don't know why they're there. The only official statement that we've heard recently is the statement by General Kelly of the Southern Command, who testified in Congress that the hunger strike is an expression of desperation, frustration, and despair that the detainees are still at Guantanamo.
Well, speaking to that, Representative Buck McKeon, he's the Republican of California who's chair of the House Armed Services Committee, says he's written 5 letters to President Obama asking him what his plan is for Guantanamo Bay. But he also writes, and this is Representative McKeon, he understands the national discomfort with Guantanamo, but the classified nature of the offenses of the detainees permit few the ability to understand the very real danger they pose to security. But they are dangerous. They do mean us harm. And until better solution is offered, Guantanamo is where they have to stay. He's saying that because of classified information, we cannot know how dangerous these men really are.
I've seen the classified information. The classified information doesn't establish that these men are dangerous at all. These men won the majority of their court cases before the D.C. Circuit, which is the Court of Appeals here, overturned the acquittals because the D.C. Circuit just didn't think courts should be involved. These men aren't accused of any crime. These men aren't accused of any offenses. The idea that they're dangerous is simply demagoguery.
Do you feel like you're in some horrible Beckett play or something? That, you know, what's it like for you to continually go back to Guantanamo?
Well, I'm afraid that I don't view that as the question. I view the question of what do my clients feel they're caught in, being trapped in Guantanamo without being charged with anything, going into their 12th year, being separated from their families, having children that they've never seen in an alien culture, with alien ways, an alien language. That by itself is torture.
When you have to leave them, given that you are one of the few people to actually see the effects of a hunger strike and force feeding and detainment, well, what is it like when you leave them? What do they say to you?
They say, help us get us out of here. They want the lawyers to advocate for them because really we're the only civilians who get to see them. And the military tries to censor much of what we have to say.
Do you think that's one of the problems? Is that Americans aren't seeing this the way you are?
I believe the hunger strike has refocused attention on Guantanamo. It really fell off the radar screen for most Americans when President Obama said he was closing Guantanamo. Now it's front and center again. The reactions I've heard, apart from Representative McKeon and Senators Graham and McCain, for example, are, this is ridiculous. We've been holding these men who aren't charged with anything for 11 years. Obama says he wants to close Guantanamo, but he keeps blaming Congress for being unable to. He's not owning Guantanamo. Powerful senators like Senator Dianne Feinstein, who really was responsible for Obama's decision not to transfer Yemeni's home, who's now calling on him to reconsider that decision. His test will be whether he will show the leadership to follow through on his own promise.
What happens if one of your clients is released and returns to Yemen and he commits an act of terrorism?
But when I went to Yemen 3 weeks ago, I visited two of my released clients in Taiz. They work at a honey shop downtown. They're the most peaceful, ordinary people you can imagine, the most harmless people. I met another former client in Sana'a, the capital. He's working as an engineer for the state oil monopoly. Other detainees are equally engaged in ordinary life, the way most people are. As even Bush administration officials have said, there's no such thing as zero risk. There's no way to assure that no one will go out and engage in terrorism. That's simply an impossible standard. And if that's what the other side is insisting on, then these men will be imprisoned for the rest of their lives.
Well, and what about you? 5 years ago, you left your job as a partner at one of the biggest law firms in D.C., Covington and Burling. Have I got that right?
That's correct.
To focus on this work with Guantanamo detainees, who pays you?
And unfortunately, right now, nobody pays me. I have no other source of income. I'm just trying to stretch out payments that I got from the firm when I left, and I'm also using my own savings.
Is there anyone in your life questioning these this decision you've made?
No, except maybe my in-laws.
That's David Reams, a human rights attorney who represents 16 clients at Guantanamo Bay and just returned from a trip there. David, thanks so much for talking to us about it.
You're welcome.
So, all you Solomons in the audience, we'd love to hear from you. Force a move of the detainees to a federal prison? Keep Gitmo open? Your thoughts? We'd love to hear them at hereandnow.org. Still ahead today, another question. Should all foreigners leaving the U.S. be fingerprinted? It's one of the amendments to the new immigration reform bill as it's being debated. That's after the latest news, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The ICA with Barry McGee. Vibrant paintings and installations capture the energy of the street in this 20-year retrospective on view now. ICABoston.org. And Harvard University, whose Harvard Summer School offers courses for high school, college, and adult students to earn academic credit and experience Harvard campus life. Summer.harvard.edu.